Washington. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, unemployment soars and Congress passes a massive budget blueprint for fiscal year 2010. We'll talk about both with James Shirk, Bradley Fellow for Labor Policy at the Heritage Foundation. What should we know about another 663,000 jobs lost in the month of March? And what's the real reason we see these proposals for healthcare, energy, and education reform inside the Obama budget? Also in this edition, judges redefine marriage again, this time in Iowa, as a unanimous state Supreme Court says a 1998 law defining marriage as one man and one woman is unconstitutional. We'll get fierce reaction from Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King. Plus, illegal immigrants and the census. Josiah Ryan, staff writer for CNSNews.com, will be with us to explain how some members of Congress are trying to change the census form to note which people in this country are legal and illegal, but will something that simple ever get approved? And Obama Mia, the Capitol Steps roll out their brand new CD, and we'll have the title track for you. All that, plus our top news at week's end, is straight ahead on Dateline Washington. We begin with a look at the jobless rates and the budget, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is James Shirk. He's a Bradley Fellow for Labor Policy at the Heritage Foundation. We've asked him to weigh in on the latest bleak jobless numbers, as well as his thoughts on the $3.6 trillion budget blueprint approved by both the House and Senate on Thursday. And James, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, the unemployment numbers were just about as abysmal as we expected. Some expected actually a little bit worse even, but 663,000 jobs lost in the month of March. The unemployment rate's now up to 8.5%. These are the worst numbers we've seen in about a quarter of a century. This is now a string of months with more than 600,000 jobs lost. Is there any bright light on the horizon, or are we going to be seeing these numbers for a while?
We're probably going to be seeing these numbers for a while because improvements in the job market are usually something that happens right at the end of a recovery, after things have begun to pick up. You're not going to see the jobs numbers improve until businesses are confident that they can invest in their companies and start expanding and start hiring. Well, that doesn't happen until the economy's already started to pick up. So just as the layoffs didn't come very heavily at the start of the recession, the end of the layoffs and the increase in hiring usually doesn't take place until towards the end of the recovery.
So this is a lagging indicator is what you're saying.
That's exactly what it is.
Another thing that this report showed is that if you factor in folks who would like to be working full-time but are only working part-time and discouraged workers, however that's defined, the unemployment rate would shoot up to about 15.5%. How should we read that? How significant is that?
Well, that's there's different ways of measuring unemployment. Is a worker who's part-time but would prefer to be full-time but has a part-time job, is he unemployed, is he not? And when you include these different measures of workers, you pretty much always get a higher level than the official posted rate. But I think it's important to make an apples-to-apples comparison to what's usually reported, and it's a pretty good definition of unemployment, which is the unemployment rate of 8.5%, which is the highest now that we've had since 1983. This is the most painful recession since we've had since the 81-82 recession. And again, in that recession, the unemployment rate kept increasing through 1983, even though the recession ended in 1982. Job losses continued for another year.
And so that's a good indication of how long we might keep seeing these numbers, or at least negative job numbers in the months ahead. James, anything in the specific sectors of the economy that jumped out at you, particularly good, particularly bad?
Well, the professional and business sector of the economy continued to lose jobs, but almost all those job losses were in temporary help services. And what that shows is that employers, again, are not hiring. A large part of the reason that unemployment is rising is not simply because layoffs have gone up. They have. But new hires have also dropped very sharply. So if you lose a job, it's much harder to find a new job. And we're seeing that showed again in this data. Interestingly, the one sector of the economy where there weren't any job losses was the healthcare sector. This is something that has been close to immune to job losses throughout the entire recession. And it was the only bright spot in an otherwise bleak report.
We're talking with James Shirk. He's a Bradley Fellow for Labor Policy at the Heritage Foundation. And James, we've mentioned how this is a lagging indicator. What are some of the economic improvements we'll see just before we might see an improvement in the labor numbers? What other economic factors generally tend to brighten just before we see the job market improving?
Well, what you'd expect to see more would be business investment and manufacturing orders and indications of sales and business activity picking up. And there's a number of different measures that that the government provides. But it's not until businesses see their sales starting to pick up that they become more confident that, well, if I invest in a new plant or if I open this new project, consumers will actually want to buy that. It's not until they have that confidence that they then start hiring new workers and expanding operations, lifting their hiring freezes and such. So what most companies are doing right now is in a sort of a batten down the hatches mode, where a lot of companies have hiring freezes. They want to keep all their expenses down as low as possible. Once they feel they can get out of that and they're looking at the economic climate and they're more comfortable, that's when they'll start hiring.
In terms of the government policies related to employment, eventually improving the employment numbers, obviously we have very different ideas from the two parties about what will improve this economy, and they seem to be equally passionate about it. Is it going to be specific policies that generally help to turn this around, or is it basically just economic and business cycles that will do it for the most part?
Well, the answer is yes. It's both. Policies make a difference, but there's also just the nature of the business cycle. You had with the collapse in housing prices and the loss in value of a lot of these financial institutions, that's just a huge shock to the economy that people need to adjust to, and it takes time to get through that. But that said, policy can either help or hurt. We're seeing the Federal Reserve right now is keeping interest rates low, which is probably the right move, but they're printing an awful lot of money to do it. And at some point, they're going to have to start allow the interest rates to rise up, or we're going to have a very severe inflation problem on our hand. They just announced last month that they were printing essentially $1.2 trillion worth of new money in order to fund the purchase of various government and non-government bonds. That's an awful lot of money to be pouring into the money supply. That could do some real damage. And then if you take a look at the stimulus bill that was passed, this is a bill that even the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says, in the long term, this will hurt the economy. The only question is in the short term, will it provide a boost or will it be a drag? Well, what this does is you're going to see more jobs in government construction and your state and local government and all the sectors of the economy that got the boost. But this is sucking up $800 billion worth of capital that could have been invested by businesses elsewhere, that could have been used elsewhere in the economy, and is now going to be directed into the government sector. Well, when the problem is private businesses slowing down on their hiring, the answer is not just pour money at the government. The answer is look for areas of the economy where there's good business opportunities despite the downturn and try and direct private resources in there. Simply taking so much of the money out of the private sector and transferring it to the government is not going to be the best use of that money, or it's not going to help us get out of the recession sooner, because that money is being spent based on political considerations, not economic considerations. It's who's the committee chairman and how much money can he send back to his district, not this is a good investment that will get Americans back and working and will get the economy back on its feet.
James, you study this issue closely, and I want to follow up on one of the points you made in that previous response, and that's about inflation. How severe could inflation get without being balanced by interest rates, and how much might interest rates have to rise in order to keep inflation in check?
The short answer is that we don't know yet, but they're printing an awful lot of money. That's how the Federal Reserve keeps interest rates low. They print money, the money goes into the banks, and the banks only earn money when they loan out the reserves, and so they loan out the reserves. The more and more money the government prints, the more and more gets in the banks, the more banks are willing to loan, and that pushes down interest rates. But what that means is to keep interest rates as low as the Fed is doing, they've got to print a lot of money. And at some point, that money has to come out of the economy, or more money, same amount of goods, and you have inflation on your hand. But it's too soon to say. Banks and consumers are being very cautious about making loans and taking out loans. So the full effect of what they've printed hasn't been seen in the economy because the banks aren't loaning it as much as you'd expect in normal times. Now, when the economy gets back to normal, when people start taking out loans and the credit markets become much more free, well, then the Federal Reserve is going to have to take a lot of that money out of the system, or inflation will rise very rapidly, and it'll be something that will hurt everyone.
A couple minutes left here with James Shirk of the Heritage Foundation. And James, just on Thursday evening, both the House and Senate, with no Republican support in either chamber, passed the president's budget blueprint, $3.6 trillion. He has made it clear that the pillars in his mind of this economic recovery will be reforming health care, energy, education, all of which will require quite a bit of spending at the outset here, as well as raising taxes on the wealthiest of Americans. What do you make of the budget and its likely impact on the economy?
Well, the problem is what the president and the Democrats in Congress want to address is not what's hurt the economy. What's hurt the economy is the downturn in the financial sector, the collapse in the home values, the what was until recently the high price of energy. Well, education and healthcare really have nothing to do with why we're in the current strait. It's a bait and switch. These are longstanding agendas they've had to regulate these markets, and they're using the cover of the economic downturn to move ahead with their plans. So it's good politics on their part, but it means that their plans to reform healthcare are really not going to do anything to help the economy. What this deficit is an enormous increase in the size of government. It both increases spending and increases taxes, but not the taxes by enough to cover the cost of the spending. So the federal debt is going to double over the next 10 years. The amount of government spending per household is going to rise by $8,000. Currently, the federal government spends about $24,000 per household. That's going to rise to $32,000 at the end of this budget after 10 years. It's going to be an enormous spending burden, which ultimately, even though that they're not fully willing to do it now, has to be paid for by taxpayers. But again, what the budget does do in the short term is bad enough. It's raising taxes on small businesses, on savings, on donations to charity. The energy proposal is this cap and trade, which is going to cost the typical households between $700 and $2,000 a year. It's not going to be something that addresses the problem. No nation can tax itself into prosperity, and government spending doesn't really promote the general prosperity because it's based on these political considerations of who's got the clout in Washington, not what's best for the economy. It's good politics, but it's probably not going to do anything to speed the recovery, and if anything, will probably delay it.
James, fascinating insight on both the fundamentals of the economy and the politics involved with what we're watching right now. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
James Shirk is the Bradley Fellow for Labor Policy at the Heritage Foundation. This is Dateline Washington.